¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Another quick word here for Amigo Energy. Amigo Energy wishing all soccer fans happy holidays, and they're going to remind you that LED Christmas lights use 80 to 90% less electricity. They last 33 times longer than incandescent bulbs. Additionally, Amigo Energy Nights Free customers pay no energy charge to light up their holiday decorations overnight. And if you've driven around Houston, there's holiday decorations everywhere. Some of the best, set up for Christmas lights that I've ever seen around the country. Take advantage. Sign up for Amigo Energy Nights Free and light up the holiday trees for less money. Go to www.amigoenergy.com/soccermatters. Enroll today or call 888-995-9299. 888-995-9299. Sign up for holiday and year-round electricity savings today. You like saving money? So do I. You can do it with Amigo Energy. All right, coming in studio tonight here, pleased to have both these guys in here. ESPN FC, Naib Moran is here. Naib, thank you very much for coming in. Happy holidays to you.
No, happy holidays to you too, Glenn, and happy holidays to Arturo Alvarez. So I had a pleasure to talk briefly outside of the studio. It should be great talking about football, the Boxing Day events. Today there was an exciting 4-3 Stoke City win against Everton. Who would think, right? Mark Hughes of Stoke City giving a 7-goal show in the Premier League.
And Arturo Alvarez, who was already introduced by Naib, La Selecta captain, joining us in here. Arturo, thank you very much. And just a reminder, Arturo, a local product here who's gone on to great success as a professional soccer player.
No, thank you, Glenn. Thanks for having me. And Naib, you know, happy holidays, and happy holidays to you too, Glenn, and thanks for having me.
All right, let's start it off with Chelsea-Manchester United today. I'll start with you, Arturo, just some of your general thoughts on the game. I know you watched it.
Yeah, no, I saw the game. I felt like out of the two, Manchester United really wanted the game more than Chelsea did, I believe. I look at Chelsea and I feel like they have no idea what they're doing. Nothing's going their way. You can see the confidence in the guys' faces that it's not there. It's been a long year for Chelsea, and it looks like it's not going anywhere. So I think they really need a leader, starting with the coach. And, you know, they didn't have that with Mourinho. So he's gone now. And hopefully, you know, this the new guy can come in and make sure that he gets the team together so they can push forward.
Gus Hiddink, now the interim manager. And Naib, to Arturo's point, it's hard for me to sit here and ponder the thought that a year ago we were watching Chelsea on the counterattack with Hazard, Ramirez, Willian, Oscar, absolutely ripping apart the Premier League. And as Arturo says now, these guys break out on the counterattack, and it just doesn't look like it doesn't flow. They don't know what they're doing. Guys are overhitting passes. Runs aren't arriving at times they should. It's really an unbelievable turnaround.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, they also brought in Pedro from Barcelona this season. Last season, Cesc Fabregas, I think, started the season pretty well in Chelsea. So it's a really team that has a lot of, full of talent, you know. The season that Hazard has been having this year has been really surprising in the sense that it's been really bad from start, you know, to the middle of the season, basically. And I think, a lot of factors. You know, I don't know how the power of Mourinho on the team, to what point did it sort of obliterated or an eruption, basically, that occurred in the team. But that thing, the key there, what Arturo said about the leader, there's not a Didier Drogba in the team like there used to be. I think Drogba was really a key point in that team, especially when they won the Champions League with Di Matteo.
But that was a year before. He wasn't there last year when they won the title.
Yeah, but I think, when
John Terry. Some people are going to say John Terry.
Yeah, John Terry, Peter Sedge, maybe the goalkeeper that's now in Arsenal. I think those are the leaders that a team needs. And at the moment, there's not one, I think.
Arturo, I'm going to take you back to Eden Hazard. Is it possible? Because you're a creative type of player. You're one that's going to think attacking first, defending second. Do you think a guy like that can get tired of a specific purpose of play? In other words, even when Chelsea won things last year and won the title, they didn't win it playing the most attractive, fun type of soccer. They blew out to a big lead. But the second part of their season was a little bit different than the first part. Do you think he could have got tired of Mourinho's ways?
You know what? I think for a player like Hazard, you know, it's just I think he needs someone there. He needs another guy to kind of support him. And I don't think he has that right now. And I think, you know, they need a player like Drogba. They need a player, a leader up top. They need, you know, where players like Hazard, like Willian, can feed off. I think, they're missing that. They don't have that. But
it's the same guys. It's Matic. It's all the same guys around him as last year, pretty much. Why is it not working?
I mean, yeah, it's, you know what, I'm just as surprised as you are. I think, you know, it's the yeah. same team.
So my theory is this. My theory is that this team grew a sense of entitlement. I don't believe they came into preseason fully mentally and physically fit. I remembered, and I've mentioned this on the show earlier, I did their game against the New York Red Bulls, where the New York Red Bulls fielded basically reserves in their USL team, and they scored 4 goals on Chelsea. They ran around them, and I thought to myself, I go, wow, this is stunning, because there's 20,000 people here. It's on national TV. And they just got run around by a bunch of kids, half of them that have never touched the ball in an MLS game. This is embarrassing. And Mourinho was upset after the game. So I keep pulling myself back to that, the preparation coming into the season. And then I say to myself, Jose Mourinho, once they lost some games, I wanted to see him be a manager that would turn it around instead of throwing all his toys out of the sandbox and leaving in what I think was pretty embarrassing fashion. And we all know he's a talented manager.
Yeah, I mean, and it tends to happen with Mourinho that in his third year with his teams, it just all of a sudden erupts. It happened in Real Madrid, it happened in Inter Milan. But here, you know, there's this fact that it always seemed that Chelsea is Mourinho's home because that's where the special one came about, you know, when he arrived from Porto. So you would think that it was this place where he could actually build a team. And he failed, I think. You know, the Diego Costa signing, you know, Diego Costa played great in Atletico Madrid, but it's not working out. Fabregas is really not the Fabregas one would have expected, really quiet at times. And, you know, so Pedro's hasn't been scoring goals at all. But you know, those are the things that I just don't – the squad's still good in a sense. I don't know what's going to happen in the winter transfer window. You know, some big signing could happen. And then, you know, in the Champions League, they have a shot to sort of save the season, I'd say, against PSG, an opponent that eliminated them last year.
Arturo, do you think these guys stopped playing for Jose Mourinho? I mean, do you think the locker room was fractured as deep as some say it was?
I want to say it was. I really want to say it was. And, I'm disappointed because I really thought Mourinho was that coach that could turn things around. But, you know, that's the interesting fact that Naive said about – you know, the third year with Mourinho's teams, they kind of fall apart. And, you know, that's something that I think it has to do with the players' mentality. If you say that, you know, you saw that, you know, their preseason preparations weren't the best. So I think that, you know, it's hard to I don't know, I guess to keep motivating these guys, you know. And I think for a demanding club like Chelsea, you know, elite clubs, they don't need this type of players. They need players that are going to want to win every single year. You know, they're not going to, you know, take their, you know, their foot off the gas, and they're just going to have to keep going forward. And I don't know. I just, like I said, I see Chelsea play and I don't think they don't want to be on the field.
Arturo Alvarez in studio and Naeem Moran. I take you back to that. And I don't want you to name names or where the situation occurred. Have you ever been on a team where you felt your teammates were tanking it because they wanted a coach out?
No, not. I've never been in a situation like that. I've been in teams where, you know, obviously there's a problems between, you know, some players and the coaches, but never been where, you know, you step on the field and you're like, you know what, I'm only going to give 60% instead of 100. So I don't think that usually happens, but you know, I've never played for Chelsea, so I don't know if I can, you know, if that happens in that club, but I don't think so.
All right, let's switch to, and I know we talked about this last week, but again, Chicharito just continues to be just such a shining star for Leverkusen in Germany. Take me into, Naib, the importance of what he is doing on this stage and then the example he's setting for a lot of Mexican players and maybe opportunity that he's helping provide, although we've had a lot of Mexican players exported to Europe and playing in Europe. But how significant is this in sort of the arc of the Mexican soccer player globally over the years that Chicharito is producing so well in the Bundesliga?
I think it's really important. I mean, it's sort of Hugo Sanchez 2.0 in a way, but with Chicharito is different because what he managed to do in the Premier League with Manchester United and then, you know, his one-year adventure in Real Madrid where he scored an important goal in a quarterfinal match against Atletico Madrid. Those are marquee moments, and now what he's doing in Leverkusen week in and week out, I think, having the minutes and scoring goals. For the Mexican player in general, I mean, I think his example is extraordinary in a way because I think there's always this sense that the Mexican player sort of conforms to the ideas of staying in Mexico and succeed in Mexico because the pay is actually really good in Liga MX. With Chicharito, you get the example that you can go out and explore, and that it's not always going to be a honeymoon because with Chicharito, there was a honeymoon period in Manchester United.
Well,
but
it's a risk.
It's a big risk.
With capital letters, risk.
Yeah, and I think Mexican footballers in general don't know the meaning of risk and what it's involved with the word risk. A lot of Mexican players like getting the accolades and the awards handed to them, but there's a big process in winning them, and I think Chicharito has been able to show them. And also, I would put also Andres Guardado in PSV, who, you know, he was sort of, he's getting good minutes over there, winning Eredivisie, basically being named the best player of the Dutch league. Those are the marquee moments that should enable more Mexican players to try their apply their craft in Europe and try and accept those risks that you say.
You know how many times I've heard Mexican fans, when the Mexican national team doesn't play well, say to me they don't play for the shirt. They don't play for the shirt, and then they allude to that very thing you just talked about, not willing to take risk. They're fat cats in Mexico because they're getting paid a ton of money, living an incredible lifestyle, adulation. Do you think this tips the scale slightly now?
I think, yeah. I think, and also, especially with the players that we're seeing right now in Portugal, you know, specifically Hector Herrera, Jesus Tecatito Corona, who are young players that are, you know, leaving that comfort in Mexico, which I think Herrera and Corona could be really rich already in Mexico right now. Corona was playing in Rayados de Monterrey, and here there's a big fan base of Rayados de Monterrey in Houston, and we can tell how powerful that club is. They've just barely inaugurated a gorgeous stadium, Bebe Vancomer in Monterrey. So just think about it. Corona was going to be the idol of Rayados de Monterrey, but he went to Europe. He had trouble in Twente, in his first years. And now, you know, he's in Porto playing Champions League. And he's only 22 years old. So I think that's sort of a little bit, that's a factor where Chicharito has played a role, I'd say.
By the way, we all just put our jackets back on. You could hang meat in this place in here. It's so cold right now. It's great. Arturo, do you know, you just heard the names Naib just whipped off that are playing Portugal, where you played, Herrera. Ton of guys in Europe right now for Mexico. Does this spell trouble for the U.S. national team and Jurgen Klinsmann, the experience these guys are getting while, you know, the Jozy Altidores, the Michael Bradleys, the Clint Dempseys have all come back. Huge monies here in MLS, monies that they never could have acquired in Europe, I don't think, and are in maybe a less pressure-filled environment. Does that spell a little bit of trouble for the U.S. in the future with Mexico?
I mean, I think it does. I think it really you know, it paints problems for the U.S. national team. I think, you know, to see young Mexican internationals go abroad and do well, I think it's alarming, no? you know, you have to, you know, I think Portugal is a league. It's like a, you know, like a trampoline. You know, you go to Europe, you go to Portugal, you go, you do well, and then you have big, big clubs after you. So I think, you know, for the fact that, you know, these Mexican players are going and doing really well for Porto, which, don't get me wrong, are, you know, top teams in Europe. Yeah, I think the U.S. needs to kind of, you know, see that. And you know, we need to get, you know, the young talent out there as well. And not only just out there, but they got to play and do well, which is what the Mexican players are doing at the moment.
Trampoline. I like that word that you described, Portugal. I've never heard it used that way. And I think that's a great word. You played in Portugal. Tell me what your most memorable moment in Portugal was.
I did. I was in Portugal for a year. Played for Paso de Ferreira. It was a small club in the first division. I got there, and ever since I got there, it was a great experience from the day, the first day that I got there to, you know, to the last day I was there. And I think learned so much as a player. After I left Portugal, I saw the game differently. And, you know, it was a team.
Can I stop you there? How did you see the game differently?
Just, you know, tactically. I mean, just the idea that they have for the game. It's just, it's unbelievable. Everything.
Take me into the details of it.
You know what? It was just, we would repeat formations and ways to come out playing from the back and through the middle up to the forwards. And we would do it so much that at first you're kind of like, why are we doing this so much? But then when you see it in the games that it just comes so easily, so natural, then you're like, oh, now I know. And now I know why we're doing this every day at practice for 2.5 hours. And then in the game, it's where it shows. I mean, we were a small club that we ended up finishing third in the league. So we were just right behind Benfica and Porto.
That's a magical season.
I mean, it was amazing. I'm telling you, it was probably that year is, it's kind of like highlighted in my career so far. And I think, you know, a lot of players, you know, that's when I got the chance to go to Videoton, which is, you know, a top team in Hungary. And, you know, they paid well. And that's the thing in Portugal. If it's not the top four teams in Portugal, the rest of the teams, you're looking at really low salaries. So kind of players go there to do well, to, you know, play their heart out, and then go somewhere else. And so being there for that 1 year, it's kind of just, you know, I got to play against Benfica, Porto, and it was a great experience. So
all right, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break here. Naib Moran, ESPN FC in studio, Arturo Alvarez. We come back, Arturo. I got another question about Portugal for you. Then we're going to find out what's going on in the professional career of Arturo Alvarez. How's that for a tease going to break? 7-Up, Bud Light break. We come back with much, much more. It's the best in soccer talk. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. I got to make sure that I put a shout-out to producer Tyler Scott in studio here tonight, who always runs the boards and produces this show. So thank you, Tyler, for all your great work. And also David Philpott, who helps us get some of our pre-prep done, and another one of our producers. So, you know, guys like me don't get on the air without the efforts of others. So in studio right now, and it's always fun having people in studio, Naib Moran of ESPN FC, Arturo Alvarez, you knew him from Major League Soccer. You just heard that he played in Portugal and Hungary, as we know. And the other thing, for those here in Houston, he's a Houston product. Played a lot of his soccer right out there in Bear Creek Park and parks all around the city here, which makes him, I think, even more important of a guest here tonight. So, Arturo, I gotta lead you into what's going on with your career right now. Where are you trying to land, and kind of where are you at?
Well, pretty much, I've been back for about 3 or 4 months in Houston, and I've been wanting to see if it's possible to come back to MLS. You know, I started my career in MLS when I was 17 and left, I want to say, 9 seasons later. So, you know, I've been following the league since I went to Europe. And, you know, I really would like to come home. You know, I got to train with the Dynamo for the past, at the end of the season, last season. So, you know, it was good. You know, I'm open to hopefully staying here in Houston. I would love to play for my hometown team. And so, but I'm open to any other possibilities around MLS and also abroad. So I'm kind of just, weighing my options and seeing which one's the best for me.
I want to talk to you about something that just jumped into my head here. You know, there's thought about Brad Davis being moved on based on a change in playing style and, you know, salary cap and all these other things that have gone on. He's obviously a legendary player. A player that's similar to you kind of starts out wide and likes to come inside. Would that be fair to say?
I think highly of Brad Davis.
Is that kind of the same way that you kind of play? Because you like starting in a wide position and then coming inside? Is that fair or not?
Yeah, I would like to say that I see myself more, you know, kind of going down the line beating players. I think Brad Davis he does drift outside, but he's, you know, obviously we all know he has a lethal cross and, you know, a good left foot, so he plays some good balls in. But I see myself more as in kind of, you know, starting in the middle, kind of drifting out wide, but, you know, going at players one-on-one. I think that's been one of my strengths throughout my career. I played against, Brad and the Dynamo a lot of times, and I know he's a legend here in Houston. And,
no doubt.
He would be greatly missed on this team if he moves away.
How about you right now with La Selecta? What's happening there? Because you played a vital role in the Gold Cup with them. You were their captain. I thought you had some very impressive performances this past summer. What's going on there with El Salvador and Arturo Alvarez?
Well, at this moment, the easiest way I can answer that question is everything's on hold right now. I couldn't sit here and tell you that I won't play for them again, but at the same time, it's just, there's a lot of personal issues, a lot of problems within the federation that are happening. So I think, you know, for me and I think for the rest of the guys to be treated fairly, there has to be a lot to change. So I think at this moment, I don't see myself being part of the national team.
Hasn't that been really the thorn in the side of a lot of countries, is just the lack of support from the federation? I mean, that's something that's always been kind of carried around by El Salvador, hasn't it been?
Yeah, I think, you know what, it's something that has affected Salvadorian soccer for years. It's not the first time that happens, and you know what, until someone kind of steps up and completely changes everything in there, it's going to continue to happen. And at the end, it's going to hurt Salvadorian soccer. And for me personally, it's going to hurt the fans because, you know, El Salvador is a country with so many problems right now that, you know, kind of they look at soccer as their way out. And for them to be seeing that soccer is being hurt from within, it's not a pretty picture.
And then, of course, all the professional teams in the country of El Salvador, it's very difficult. Corruption. Financially, the players have a hard time getting paid. It's struggle after struggle.
Yeah, no, it's a huge problem. It starts in the federation. It starts in the league, the Salvadorian league. And so, you know, there's, like I was telling Naive earlier, I think there's a lot of talent in El Salvador. It's just there's no organization to kind of get that talent going places. So
no path.
Exactly. There's no path. It's just there. They need someone to guide these players, especially the young players, because I can sit here and tell you that there is really great soccer players in El Salvador. So, but until there's nothing done within the soccer itself in El Salvador, no one's going to get to see these players.
Arturo Alvarez in studio. We move on to Naive Moran now. You talk in your latest article about the Liga MX addressing defensive woes to compete internationally, yet what appeals to everybody about the Mexican League is because it's a high goal scoring league. It's a league where people take a lot of risk. It's kind of fun in games. It's maybe more winning 3-2 than it is 1-0.
Yeah, I mean, I think the origin of that piece sort of starts with Juan Malillo's declaration in an important newspaper in Argentina, Clarín, you know, he basically says in Argentina.
Wait, that, before you go on, yeah. tell people who Juan Malillo
was. Juan Malillo is one of the main, advisors to Jorge Sampaoli and the Chile national team, and also one of a great friend of Pep Guardiola. So, when Pep Guardiola has doubts, he always goes to Lillo. So that's why it intrigued me, the quote, because he praises a lot the Liga MX because of the excitement of the goal-scoring galore that you were talking about, Glenn. But what I note in the article is that, you know, we see Liga MX teams always winning the CONCA Champions League and they go on to the Club World Cup. But you never see a Mexican team playing with its full potential. You know, I was really, frustrated in a way.
You mean at the Club World Cup?
In the Club World Cup, when I saw Club America lose to Guangzhou, the team Luis Felipe Scolari's Chinese club over there. You know, because it was a match where America dominated and it led 1-0, and then in the last 10 minutes it lost the lead and it ended up losing 2-1 against Scolari's Chinese team. So when I see that, I believe that you see a lot of defensive mistakes from clubs in Mexico. I think certain coaches don't really pay attention to the defensive issue. They always think about attacking. And when I talk with coaches over there, like Juan Antonio Pizzi, who's Club León's coach, and he coached in Valencia just a couple of years ago, you know, a coach with a good hierarchy in a way, he noted that, you know, that there's defensive issues in the league. And then you also talk to, for example, Matias Almeida, who's the coach in Chivas and also Argentine, and he says that as well. So I think it's something that is not addressed as much. And, you know, in Liga MX, basically the 17 clubs can end up champions because it's so even. You know, it's not like La Liga where it's Barcelona or Real Madrid. Here, there's some balance in that regard. Most of the teams have a shot of winning because they have the playoffs after the regular season. But, you know, I do think that there has to be more preparation in the defensive, tactical sense of the game.
Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5 here. We're in our Soccer Matters studios here at ESPN 97.5 in the Galleria, talking here with Naeed Moran of ESPN FC. You can go to ESPN FC and just click on the Mexico link, and you'll get his articles, a lot of good articles there. Also, Tom Marshall, who's been a frequent guest of this show. We appreciate Naeed being in studio. Arturo Alvarez is here as well, has played in Hungary, Portugal, Major League Soccer. You know, we just heard Naeed's comments, Arturo. He's talking about the frustration of a Mexican club not winning the World Club Championship, yet we sit here going, no MLS team can win CONCACAF. And in the big picture of world soccer, that's something you got to begin to do, isn't it?
I was part of the Real Salt Lake team that lost to Monterrey in the final. And I can sit here and tell you that we were the better team. In both games, we were the better team. It just wasn't there for us. And then to look at I didn't see the game, but I kind of followed what Montreal did against America. And it was just, you know, I think like a team like Club America is just, you know, has such a powerful investors, I guess you can say. You know, they're the richest club in Mexico, and you could tell that they invest in top quality attacking players. But I do agree with him in being frustrated with the whole defensive part of the game. But yeah, I think MLS needs to we need to get a team to the Club World Cup, and we need to do it soon.
Well, if you're ever going to knock a big European power out, this is the tournament to do it in, because I get the sense sometimes they took their foot off the pedal in this event a little bit, fairly or unfairly. I've seen it happen sometimes. I'm not saying that Barcelona did that, but it may be the time to catch a team maybe a little bit down. And the publicity of this, Naeed, I mean, you know, for a Mexican club to be playing against a top European team or an MLS club, I mean, that just could reverberate in so many places.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things with Liga MX clubs that has helped, I think, in a sort of way, the football there, is the fact that they can play in Copa Libertadores. And they also been close there. Cruz Azul reached a final against Boca Juniors. Then Chivas reached it against, I think, Internacional of Brazil. And then recently, Tigres, the current champion in Mexico, played against River Plate. And, you know, it wasn't the best River Plate in history. I think there's been better River Plates. And at Tigres with André Pierre Gignac, who came from Marseille, Rafael Sobis, who already knew what it meant to win a Libertadores, Jofre Guerón from Ecuador won it with Universitario de Quito. It was a team built to win Copa Libertadores, and because of defensive issues, and also because in the first leg of the game against River Plate in that final, Tigres just missed a lot of chances. And that sort of happens a lot with Mexican teams, not just clubs, but also the national team in certain events, you know, especially in the World Cup in the round of 16 matches. But, you know, it's something that you see as a trend. And also, like, going to the beginning of the point, Glenn, yes, it is a great opportunity to do big in the Club World Cup because a lot of other world sides will be watching the teams, and you get attention, you know. And I think America was going to play against FC Barcelona, and I think America was already thinking a lot about FC Barcelona, but I totally forgot about Scolari's team in that first game. And they ended up playing a fifth-place match, you know.
Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, by the way, we'll take your calls if you want to join the discussion. This happened the last time Naib was in studio, 713-780-3776. Again, that's 713-780-ESPN. Arturo, you know, we're listening to Naib talking about the bar being raised against the River Plates of the world, the Boca Juniors of the world, going to the World Club Championship and the Barcelonas of the world. What about when you were playing in Portugal for a smaller club and you go to a place like Benfica or Porto? It had to be a little bit of a different feel walking out in their stadiums for you as a player when it came to incentive and motivation.
Oh, of course. I mean, I think, you know, there's just a chance to play against those teams. You know, those teams obviously are in the stage of European soccer. You know, a lot of those teams play Champions League, play Europa League. So those are the teams that you want to go and beat and kind of, you know, showcase your talent. So you're always going to go in there with an extra motivation. So, you know, I got the chance to play against Benfica, Sporting, Porto, and it's a great experience. And, you know, you also got to be realistic. You know, you see the players that they have and you see, you know, some players are really quality players, and that's where they're there. And I think, you know, you should want to be there. You know, you want to play against teams like that so you can see what you need to do or what you need to work on to be at that level.
Now, El Salvador, you guys played a lot of friendlies prior to the World Cup against, you played the defending World Cup champion, Spain. That's a game that I called in Landover, Maryland. So that day when you were on the field with Spain and Diego Costa, it was kind of a strange day. Was there anything strange about Spain that day? It seemed like they were, I don't know if they were sleepwalking through it. Some were saying, you know, maybe they didn't want to get injured. Their focus wasn't really there. And then, of course, we knew what they did in the World Cup. They fell out in stunning fashion. What were your thoughts on that day when you played Spain in Landover, Maryland? That was a big crowd. I think it was like 40,000 people.
Yeah, no, it was a great experience. I think... You know, there's a lot of factors that go into friendly games, especially right before a major tournament. You know, I don't think a lot of teams are going to go out and give, you know, all they got 100%. You know, you got to watch the tackles. You got to, you know, think about the tournament. So, but, you know, it's funny because they didn't play well that game at all.
They didn't look interested.
Not at all.
I'm sorry. And I don't mean that in any disrespect, but... You know, so naturally I walked away from the game going, look, they're in low mode right now. They just want to get down to the World Cup. But then lo and behold, wow, we found out something different.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think if you're going into, let's say Spain was playing El Salvador, I know, you know, in paper it looks, you know, completely, you know, it's an advantage. And so I think, you know, if you go into a mentality with that mentality to any game, it's not going to go well. And then prior to that, you have a big tournament like the World Cup, and you're already playing like that in the games leading up, you know, getting in preparations to the World Cup. It's going to follow you.
Yeah, and I think it did. I agree. I mean, if you're not mentally engaged, the other strange thing that day was Diego Costa looked like he was injured the whole time. Didn't look like he could run right. Did you notice that?
I think Diego Costa looks like that every game.
Yeah, well.
It's just.
That will be the quote of the night. You need to remember that one, Tyler.
He just, don't get me wrong, great forward at Atletico Madrid. He did really well, scored a lot of goals for them. But I just feel like a lot of the games, he's just focused on other things than just getting the ball in the net.
Arturo Alvarez in studio, along with Naib Moran of ESPN FC. I guess we're going to take a little break here. When I hear music, that means we're going to take a break. It's a hard break. As we go to break, we'll come back with more on Arturo and Naib. 713-780-3776 is the number to call in. 713-780-3776. Quick word here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They work for you 24/7. Personal Houston injury attorneys, they handle personal injury cases. It can be plant refinery accidents, medical accidents, 18-wheeler, boat and car, wrongful death. DaspitLaw.com and John Daspit have you covered. 713-364-0915. DaspitLaw.com. That's DaspitLaw.com. Now, with John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, you rest more assured in times of stress depending on the circumstances of your accident. You have a hard-hitting personal injury attorney on your side to fight for your right for compensation and to navigate you through the tough times. Contact the Daspit Law Firm, 713-364-0915. Or 888-273-1045. That's in English and Spanish. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, and Glenn Davis. Thanks, the Daspit Law Firm. We'll take a break. A lot more to come with Naib Moran of ESPN FC and Arturo Alvarez.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gao Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And I believe this is our final segment here with Arturo Alvarez and also Naib Moran of ESPN FC. Great having you guys in studio here tonight. We do appreciate that. Again, a quick word here for Bud Light. They remind you they are the official sponsor of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Bud Light reminds you, tremendous amount of soccer content coming through the city. You've got, coming up in the next couple of months, you've got Women's Olympic qualifying. You're going to see the U.S. here. They get to the semis, the final. You're going to see them here. You've got Copa Centenario. We know Mexico is going to be playing here. You've also, we're going to see the bars filled during the European Championships. There is so much going on soccer-wise. Oh, by the way, NCAA Men's College Cup will be here in 2016 at BBVA Compass Stadium. And I'll tell you what, we better make sure we fill that stadium and get some fans in there, or it will hurt soccer at all levels here because we are a great soccer city. We got to get out and support it, and Bud Light wants you to get down to the beautiful BBVA Compass Stadium, over to Energy Stadium. Bud Light reminds you, that you want to be around like-minded individuals in the great game of soccer. Bud Light is the perfect beer for whatever happens. Bud Light, the official beer of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. All right, I'm going to come back right to you, Arturo. Enough consequence in Liga MX and MLS when it comes to the regular season. Now, this is always that sort of yin and yang between the excitement of the playoffs, which there's no doubt MLS, this decision day thing, this was exciting this year. There's no doubt the playoffs are exciting. But, boy, for me, there's just too many stale moments during the regular season where the consequence of losing is not as big as it should be.
I think it was a perfect example, this MLS Cup 2015. You have Columbus. That was a team that was steady, playing great soccer throughout the whole season. And then, you know, has a good run in the playoffs. And then you have Portland that kind of, you know, they kind of hit it towards the end of the season. They got, you know, they started playing well at a perfect time. And they, you know, Portland, I think they kind of struggle at the beginning of the season, you know, and then at the end and the final third of the season, they picked it up and they had a great run. And to be quite honest, that's the way playoffs works, you know. you kind of sneak into the playoffs in a way, you can say, and have a great run. And I think it kind of, I don't know if it hurts, you know, the importance of the whole season. I mean, do you want to be known as the champion that kind of sneaked into the playoffs and wins it? Or you want to be known as the champion that, you know, controlled the whole season and was the better team throughout the whole year?
Put the best body of work together.
Exactly.
Well, then MLS will say to you, well, that's why we have the Supporter Shield, but I don't think enough goes to the Supporter Shield winner. And I whether it's financial, whether it's, I think there has to be more reward for what you do over the course of a full season. But Supporter Shield will never mean as much, Naib, as winning the MLS Cup, because that's just the way it's positioned in America.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at it from the Liga MX perspective, you know, I sort of see it as you know, a disadvantage, you know, for development in a way. Because one of the things that's going on in Mexico is that there's a lot of foreigners that are becoming Mexican citizens immediately, you know, I'd say in 2 years, 3 years. And this causes that in squads you would see the maximum you can have is 5 foreigners. But then you will see those 3 Argentinian Mexicans, Brazilian Mexicans, so that's 8. And usually those are 8 starters. And so that leaves 3 spots for Mexican players. And not any Mexican player is going to play, you know. Coaches are less confident on young players. You know, that's what I want to point out. And in Mexico, you know, it's lacking, you know, especially in the forward position. You know, we were talking a lot about Chicharito, but Chicharito is an exceptional case, I'd say. And, you know, keep in mind that Chicharito was born and raised in Chivas, the only Mexican, all-Mexican team in Liga MX. So that played in his advantage. You know, so those are little details that I think hurt, I think, Liga MX. The fact that it's short season, you know, it's sort of permissive. You know, you can have a not so good 50-50 season, but then you reach the playoffs and then you end up winning it. You look like the boss, basically. You know, and I think...
But that's what you get judged on. Listen, we have to be completely honest here. Mm-hmm. You get judged on the MLS Cup and what you do in the playoffs. I think if you don't make the playoffs in Major League Soccer, if you're a team that's been established, it's a major black mark, the way it's set up. I think certain teams like this is judgment day now for the Dynamo in year two here.
Yeah.
With a lot of change. I think L.A. now is going through a lot of change. I think there's a number of teams that they're doing going through a rebuild, and I don't think he should be afraid to say that. But boy, you don't make the playoffs in MLS, it's not a good season.
No, I agree. I think if you're not making the playoffs in MLS, it wasn't a good year, and based on the fact that you're being judged on just winning the MLS Cup, then you kind of have to, you know, you have to take responsibility for it. I think, you know, if like you said, if it was the Supporter Shield that was, you know, had, you know, a little bit more of importance, then, you know, and you win the Supporter Shield, you know, and then things don't go well for you in the playoffs, then, you know, you kind of, you know, have some cushion for error there. But other than that, I think if you're not making the playoffs in MLS, it's, you know, it's, you got to, you know, sit down and look.
Now, in fairness, though, Naib, you heard what Arturo said.
Yeah.
In fairness to the Houston Dynamo, when you bring in a manager from the Premier League who has to learn the ropes, and I'll tell you what, Owen Coyle has been great about this because he said, look, I've got to get a feel for this for first year. He's got a new staff. You got a new structure that includes a general manager. There's a lot of newness going on for the Dynamo.
Yeah.
There is a lot of catch-up in certain areas as well, if we're really being honest here. I don't think there's any question. They now have, you know, got a, whether you want to call it a general manager, a technical director, you know, there's all these relationships that have to work. There's a renewed emphasis on player development, which I think is essential for every club in MLS. So in that case, I think some teams, you know, deserve a little bit of leeway in year one, which was last year for the Dynamo. But now year two,
you got to start giving results.
Produce.
Yeah, you got to produce. And it's the difficulties. I mean, we'll also see a year one in New York City FC, you know, with Vieira, you know, coming a new coach, basically, and young, and what he did in Arsenal as a player was fantastic and everything. But this is another different story. It's like, will these coaches that come from Europe really understand what they're getting themselves into? Because I think the system and the idea, you know, how players are brought up, how they develop, you know, in the NCAA. You know, there's not that many young prospects coming.
Well, you're
from
not going to solve a problem by opening your wallet. And quite frankly, Arturo, I'm fascinated, and I'm glad that we have to be glad the New York City FCs and the LAs are here, bringing in stars. I think the Patrick Vieira thing is going to be fascinating for the exact reasons Naib says. Can this guy adjust and get it done? Is he a quick learner? Is he going to get the support he needs to understand the league, all the mechanisms in buying and selling players? But along those lines, you say to yourself, look what's happening in the Premier League. You notice in some ways slightly that the big boys are not just going in and stealing players from other teams now that they've got resources. Stones from Everton, right? Chelsea was trying to rip him out of Everton. Wouldn't let him go.
Barkley from Everton as well.
Barkley another guy. I mean, you go on and on. The guys now that are so successful at Leicester, Mahrez and Vardy, have said they're not going anywhere. I love this. I the little guy getting the chance sometime.
No, I think. You know, I think this year is in the EPL is something, it's something great. You know, I think, you know, small teams have had a way to keep their best players, and you know, those best players have been loyal to their teams, and it's paying off. And you know, and it's not like there's no bullying in the EPL at this moment. And I think, you know, it's in a way it's funny because, back, like. 4 years from now, 4 years ago, that's what EPL teams were doing. They were just going in and buying the best players from all these smaller teams and kind of running away with the league, but not anymore.
Yeah, just extracting them, Naib, and you know, crushing the fans of this team. I mean, you remember when Wayne Rooney left Everton, how nuts everybody went in Liverpool, in that city? When he left to go to Manchester United, I mean, that was beyond belief.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting. I mean, the Premier League as a league is just fascinating because of how many players come in and even coaches. You know, Watford with Quique Sánchez-Flores, a Spaniard who was successful in Spain, but who you wouldn't have expected for him to be successful in his first season with Watford. And Watford is basically the United Nations, to say something. I mean, there's players from all over the world. So that's tough for a coach, and he's actually succeeding. With Stoke, it's interesting with Mark Hughes because he got a lot of players from Barca. Boyan, Afelai, who played a while there, Muniesa, you know, so, you know, try to get the ones that don't make it in Barca are going to land in Stoke, but it's a project, it's a development, and it takes years, you know, it takes
a
lot of patience.
He's done a nice, and we got to wrap it up, guys, but he's done a nice job of changing the playing style of Stoke. It's a more attractive playing style now. Gone are the days of the long throw-in from Rory Delap. We got Jeff Cameron to do it now. He played 90 minutes today, and Stoke were winners today. Arturo, thank you as always for coming in studio. We're going to stay in good touch with you, find out where your next stop is in your professional career. Naib Moran of ESPN FC, thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn, and also great to meet Arturo for the first time.
Photo op after we get off the air here. For Tyler Scott, behind the glass, I'm Glenn Davis. Again, quick reminder, Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. It's Facebook, Soccer Matters. And if you dare, it's Instagram, Glenn Davis Soccer. Not sure about that one. Take a break. We'll finish it off with the police tonight. RIP Lemmy. Good night, everybody.
ESPN 97.5.